Hiya, Roland. Listen, could I borrow your English notes?
You've got to be kidding.
But I lent you my math homework at least 10 times.
Sorry, Stevens. It's a dog-eat-dog world out there. I got to look out for number one.
Pig? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 341, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson. It is a week after Nerdtacular, and we're happy to be here. Joining me today, Brian, his creepy science teacher, blows cigar smoke into expensive scientific equipment. Dunaway.
Oh, hi. I'm going to ask you guys, would you prefer the short American version or the long Russian version of my intro this week?
Oh, man, this is a hard call.
Long Russian version.
Yeah.
Okay, I must warn you, my Russian is bad. Okay, here we go. Yes. Hello. I've totally lost it now.
Yeah, it's already...
Wait. Did you have it at one point?
Yes. Hello? Is this Kremlin? This is top secret KGB agent reporting in... I have just returned from American nuclear facility in Ithaca.
Oh, my God.
I have brought with me samples of American plutonium. I must say, the mission was easier than we had imagined. Ronald Reagan's Americans are so overconfident in their security that they have left full sample on table, unguarded. However, if this sample represents the full force of the American might, then we can sleep well tonight, comrade. Early tests have shown that this plutonium is not very effective explosive. I feel so safe with this container that I slept with it under my pillow last night. I was surprised to discover this morning that I had sprung a leak during my slumber. When I woke up, I was sure that I would have radiation sickness. But instead, my hair has never been fuller or shinier. And smell it. Oh, this is a phone joke. Yes, I know that's not how that works, yeah. But this movie could be called That's Not How Any of This Works.
For sure.
Holy shit, your accent is so bad, dude.
I told you it was bad, and I gave the choice up front.
Oh, it was great.
So you have nobody to blame but yourself.
No, I'm glad we went that way, because it turned out great. All right, also with us, Randy, here at this facility, we only hire the worst night security guards, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian.
Randy.
Thanks for joining me on this tour of my highly secured but nothing unusual going on here, no siree laser lab. Over here we have Walt, the world's oldest security guard. We employ old people because they're going to die soon anyway. So if there were some sort of accident here, not that there's anything dangerous here. Yeah, so this is the laser, and this is a Faraday cage. You never mind why that's here. What's that? Oh, that's just the lubricating fluid for the robot. What do you mean? Wait.
Robot.
Oh, that. Oh, that's where we keep our lunch. Yeah, so what? What's that? It's plutonium-239, you little shit. Keep pestering me, and I'm going to call your mother.
Oh, man.
Seriously, what's her number? I want to call your mother so bad.
Okay, sway into his mom. Dude, that was some acting. You were doing some method acting there. I liked it. Finally,
author.
Finally, Brian, hey, I know I stole your nuclear material, but I'm also going to put a shit ton of sugar in your coffee just to be a dick Emmett.
Yeah. Wow. Prescient. Hey, Larry, I swear there's some nights it's tough to be a security guard at a secret nuclear laboratory. First off, you've got those random whirring noises, like a little remote-controlled 4x4 pickup truck. I swear. Remote-controlled cars make me want to hide behind the nearest wooden crate. Then, there's the fact that the whole building is made out of corrugated tin with about an inch of fiberglass insulation. But to top it all off, this coffee tastes funny. Not funny ha-ha, but funny tee-hee.
Funny, I'm going to have diabetes.
Yeah, that was, it had a fun little payoff at the end with him kind of looking at his coffee like, oh my gosh.
He looked back at the guy, you mean, he looked back at Pervo, the married man who's into the high school chick.
Yeah, high school chick from Sex and the City. He's all into her. That drove me slightly crazy because I've never seen a ton of Sex and the City, but you've seen like that whole show, right? Like from top
watched
to bottom.
Watch the whole damn series, but neither of the movies. Like there's any consolation in the fact that I watched the entire series, but neither of the movies.
Did you immediately recognize her and go, oh, she's the fourth one I don't care about.
Oh,
that much.
Yeah. No, she's Miranda. She, there's something I found very attractive about Miranda over, Samantha and,
who's the
Charlotte? Charlotte was my favorite, but there was something kind of sassy and cute about Miranda. And, oh my God, what am I talking
about? Yeah,
what are
listen to you? Jeez.
I like sassy.
Are you going to tell me how handsome you think
Mr. Big was?
Yeah, Chris Noth.
He was a dick, though. He never really knew how to treat Carrie.
He was really good at solving crimes on Law and Order for 20 years or however long he did.
That's
it.
Right.
Well, the movie is The Manhattan Project. This was my first viewing. I had no idea this existed. I feel like I'd seen, this is like one of those walk around Blockbuster and see a cover and go, oh, that looks like something, and then never think about it again. Probably because this came out in 1986. John Lithgow doing his thing. He's, this is what, pre-Harry and the Hendersons or post? I don't even know.
Pre, about like a year or two, right? Wasn't Harry like 88 or something?
Very early... John Lithgow stuff.
Yeah. Although I don't think it predates. Yeah, it doesn't predate Footloose, where he played the preacher dad.
No.
But yeah.
Where he played Kevin Bacon? No, it wasn't.
I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen him lately, but man, that dude is great. Like he's
fantastic.
Unbelievable. And he's good in this, but there's something that always annoys me about him in the 80s. I don't know what it is. Can't put my finger on it, but he's annoying to me.
Yeah, this came This came right after World According to Garp, which was kind of the first thing that I remember ever seeing him in.
Yeah.
Is as a transgender.
I didn't see anything after the penis biting off scene.
Oh. Is that where he's turned off the movie?
Oh. Yes.
Like, I'm done. Licks. I'm done.
Gotta go.
Wait a minute. There's a penis biting off scene in the world. Yeah. I've never seen the World According to Garp.
In the library in San Benito, Texas, when I was a kid, I took down the John Irving book, The World According to Garp, and found there were a bunch of pages missing. Someone had removed the most graphic.
The Russians did it.
Part.
Yeah.
There's several different spots in that book that are graphic sex.
I thought they were I thought that was like a lighthearted comedy thing. It's not.
No, it's a very heavy. It's a surprisingly heavy film, it feels like. I mean, it's early Robin Williams, and it's very. Dark moments
and the movie is way lighter than the book.
Yeah.
Right? Oh wow. Really?
Is it?
Okay, I haven't read the book.
Yeah.
The book is a celebration of the darkness of the other civil rights movements in the United States. So like other than Black civil rights, it's a celebration of feminism and of homosexual civil rights and so on. Only it's very dark because it's set during the time, in like the 60s and 70s when nothing was going right for those movements.
Right. Is it a celebration of one biting off another one's wiener? Like, is that the deal?
No.
It was, the way that plays out is Garp's wife is messing around with another guy in a car outside their house.
Yeah.
And Robin Williams wants to catch them.
Yeah.
And so he rams, he comes home, he sees them in the car, and he runs into the car as hard as he can. And
this
is blackness freaks me out.
I know.
The whole thing right. being, this is one of several spots in that book where the theme of sexuality always leads you to bad things is played out graphically. And it's like, it's really unfortunate, but I didn't know as a kid
with a dead guy or a dying guy so that she can have Garp.
Oh, really?
That's true. That's also true. It starts with,
You guys, my entire
rape of a soldier in a hospital.
You're reshaping my entire perception of life. I didn't know this was what this was. I thought it was like this quirky dude that wandered around.
You need to watch
it. It's the World According to Patch Adams.
Yeah,
you?
I did. I thought it was just like Robin Williams going, oh yeah, life is funny. Isn't it quirky? How weird. I'm going to travel around and look what I learned today. That's really what I thought.
Taking a flubber. No, RV. Yeah. No.
This is crazy. All right, that is
one hour photo.
That is easily right. That is easily the and most really, derailed we've ever gotten the quickest on a show. But anyway,
but,
go ahead.
But I just want to finish the story. So I'm a kid. I'm like 11. I go to the public library, and I've heard of this movie that I've not been allowed to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the book, John Irving, mm-hmm. The World According to Garp. And I pull it down, and I read the whole damn thing, and I don't realize that I've been skipping over tons of sections where the pages had been torn out, presumably by some busybody local who, you know, didn't want kids to nope. read about anything naughty.
Nope.
And so I actually thought it was a pretty bad book. Like it didn't really speak to me at that age.
What happened to his penis? I don't understand. The pages are missing. Yeah.
And so then I read it again and when I was in my 20s and I was like, this is a fantastic book. I must have just been an idiot as a kid. And then it slowly dawned on me that I had just been missing big chunks.
Mm-hmm.
That I was, you know, prevented by these crazy people.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Crazy people known as parents.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, this movie, I never heard of it. Manhattan Project. I assumed it was an actual telling of the tale of the creation of the atomic bomb.
Batman, the right. little boy. Right?
Yeah, yeah. All that stuff.
That's not Manhattan, man.
Yeah. It didn't happen. In fact, if you Google search Manhattan Project, you get all these cool black and white photos.
It's because you're thinking of Philadelphia Project,
well,
right?
Yeah, movie-wise. But if you look up Manhattan Project, it's a real thing, and there's black and white photos of dudes working on shit, and it's, you know, it's a real deal. But if you have to put movie at the end of that to get anything related to this, so
yeah.
It feels like one of those things. It's like calling a movie today. It's like saying, Pearl Harbor, and then
World War II.
Yeah, or calling it Pearl Harbor, and then finding out it's a teen sex romp about something
about a woman named Pearl.
Yeah.
Okay, but there is a thematic connection here. I just want to, I don't want to make the film sound good because it's not, but there's a thematic connection for the name,
okay.
And that is that the original Trinity Project at Los Alamos and other places was very much like children playing God, because the scientists who weren't children but who were doing things that no one had ever done and just finding out what would happen were very much like children in that one aspect, that they really weren't able to predict what, you know, was going to happen. So they were experimenting with really, really dangerous stuff in the real world, and that had consequences. So this film, I think it's okay to call it the Manhattan Project. I really do. This allegory of child, you know, genius doing something that he doesn't really know why, and he doesn't really know how dangerous it is. It makes sense to me, and I can't think of a better title. So there's also that.
He's also go ahead. Go ahead.
Just gonna say that I think this kid is a psychopath.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. I mean, it goes from being, you know, like, oh, he's kind of a little scamp, isn't he? And, you know, he teases the class nerd and da-da-da. And then it turns into like, no, he is like borderline terrorist.
Yeah.
He is. It's when he goes in. Okay, so this movie is kind of, part of it's a heist movie. And usually the fun in a heist movie is the setup. So you go to someone's, you know, you go to someone's house and you sit down and you have a big map and you we'll walk through. You have a montage. Yeah. We'll go here and we'll do this and then we'll do this. And it's fun. And you feel like you're a part of the heist. In this one, you're dropped in the middle of a heist movie and it's the kid and he's running around MacGyver and stuff. And you're like, what's this kid doing? I think he's just going to blow the whole place up. He's insane.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, and I know the whole premise of the movie is, oh, he takes it too far. But
yeah.
He should be, if he's smart enough to know all these things that he already knows, and he's written to be an extremely intelligent kid.
Right, right.
He should know, all right, building an atomic bomb and taking it to the science fair is a really, really bad idea.
A bad, bad idea. So if the purpose of this movie was to scare the bejesus out of us and go, there's some crazy kids out there, mission accomplished.
Yeah,
if they were trying to get us to be on the side of the kid,
So they weren't trying to get us to be on the side of the kid, but the movie's different in 2017 than it was in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And I know this because I watched it when I was a kid.
Yes,
when
me
I was
too.
The
yes.
when I was the when I was about oh it it must have come out on DVD not DVD VHS It must have come out on VHS when I was about 12. Mm-hmm. And my memories of seeing it the first time, my parents rented it. I watched it over and over. My memories are like, I was really in love with Cynthia Nixon at the time.
Yeah.
there's a lot to unpack there, but the summary
She is cute in this film.
And sexually aggressive, and she smokes. And sexually aggressive.
And she wears ironic shirts where she watches TV with a TV on her shirt.
Yep. She wears impossibly long denim button-up shirts.
She's got a big old braid down the front. Who puts a braid in the front? That's crazy.
And she drove a Ford Escort. That would end up being my first car, and that's not really relevant. But
Those were, by the way, those were colossal pieces of garbage, that car.
Yes, my first car. Ford Escort. Really easy to repair, though. I learned everything
Also really easy to set on fire, as Tina and I found out.
But the other thing about her that really spoke to me when I was 12 was the fact that she just goes along. She falls in love with this guy instantly and goes along with anything. She will participate in anything for him instantly.
But isn't this drugstore cowboy or Bonnie and Clyde kind of?
Mentality. Well, except that, and this is where I disagree. I think we are absolutely supposed to be on the side of this kid. It's written to be, they're doing this big government cover up and they're hiding this thing and she's going to expose it and he's going to help expose it. And he's going to be free at the end. If we're not supposed to be rooting for the kid, who are we supposed to be rooting for?
Yeah, no one's the answer. By the end, it's just, I think.
And that's why I think it's not necessarily a Bonnie and Clyde thing as much as it feels like they decided to remake War Games 2 years after they made War Games.
Except really bad because you loved Matthew Broderick, right?
Right, but here's the difference. Here's the difference. In War Games, you had empathy and you cared about the lives of the people, and they had, and more importantly, they had empathy in their world. They seemed to have an understanding that, oh my gosh, this actually means the death of millions. Like, we got to be careful and blah, 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 blah. Like, it became, the weight of the situation became real. This kid seems to be completely emotionally detached. He's like the definition of a sociopath and doesn't have any kind of like emotional intelligence. So when he's doing these things, he's just like, I just want to win first place. It's like, dude, you have a nuclear device in your car.
You can't win first place. Somebody brought a giant bubble machine. You can't win there.
Are you kidding me? Roland invented the internet.
Yeah, that's true. Roland invented the internet. I forgot about that. Little shithead. I freaking hate that kid.
I love to hate Roland.
I don't want this entire episode to be me ranting about the bad science in this movie, but
please.
We just ran past something that really bothered me. Right out of the gate, our trope of the teenage science genius, which is so tropey. Believe me, I knew teenage science geniuses. I met them at science fairs when I was a teenager. This idea that we start on this kid and he's in the lab early, okay? So the teacher lets these kids in the lab early. Yeah. Okay, no, that has never happened. But secondly, he's in there. So he's stirring a freaking Florence flask with a long pipette. Like, the kid's got no idea how you do science. And then he's supposedly making an explosive. But it's a contact explosive, whatever is.
Listen, if you stir, can someone answer me this? Because this is something I don't know. If you stir dishwashing liquid long enough, will it turn into a little metal shavings? Is that how that works?
No, he put glitter. Yeah, you missed it because he there's a scene right before he kisses Smokey Lady, Smokey the Lady, on the couch. He's adding what looks like baking soda glitter, and he's got aluminum foil. It's very quick.
Okay,
but it's
I blinked and missed it.
What Scott's talking about is
it is Alberto VO5.
Right. Sorry.
Scott's talking about filtering, and you didn't realize he had a cheesecloth, and the fluid was going through and leaving the flakes.
We're talking about in his house when he's actually making the. He's over
at the girl's house. By the way, kid is not only a sociopath, he's also a kleptomaniac.
Yep.
Witnessed by his bag of stolen shit.
Yep.
Yeah. Because everything he has in that bag, I'm pretty sure mom is like going, I can't turn on the radio because all the D batteries are gone. Yep. Where's my shampoo?
Yep. And this, by the way, is one of those, I know we talk about it almost every movie that was made in this era, but every parent and adult in this thing sucks. They're all bad. They're dumb. So they don't notice anything. Things are happening right under their nose, and they're like, "Oh, doopy doopy doo. You want some ice cream, kids?" Like, they're just so stupid.
I'm telling you, if a kid, just this one thing, if a kid made some gunpowder in your lab in your high school and attached it to a drawer and caused a little explosion, that whole science department gets shut down. Not just the teacher loses their job, which they do
then
the same
now?
Day. I'm telling anytime.
Really? And we had some shenanigans in our science labs during the 80s. And
yeah, but did you blow up the drawer for the kid or any of that?
Nonsense. Not quite that, but we had some shenanigians.
I mean, look, the worst that ever got in mine is
visited the principal and you got talked to, and you might even get in school suspension, but you know.
We did some things with like liquid nitrogen, and we had one kid make a pentagram on his desk out of rubber cement and then let it on fire and you know, like stuff like that, but nobody ever was like, I've combined these eight compounds to make, and most unrealistic thing in the movie I would like to just point out is the school's biggest science nerd is also the best goalie in their hockey team. F that.
Okay,
that
stop again. Stop there. Because this is one of the places where I identified with the kid. So I was into science and I played goalkeeper for my soccer team for like a long time. And keeping goal was my jam. It was like the thing that really,
I was a goalie.
I understood it. And as a kid, it never occurred to me that it was weird. Watching it yesterday, I finally realized, oh, wow, this is really unusual.
Yeah.
For starters, goalkeepers are a strange sort.
Yeah, they are.
And, you know, like you, when you go to soccer tournaments, you hang out with the goalkeepers and you realize, oh, these are a bunch of weirdos. But, but also,
you're welcome, goalkeepers, if you didn't know.
Yeah.
They know. They all know. Yeah. But, but also, you're absolutely right. I was shocked by all the things like, did you see his bedroom? No kid's bedroom looked like that.
Nope. Ooh, what genius puts an exit sign on the only door in the room?
I don't know.
Exit. By the way, not to detract, but I just found the IMDb photo for this week. It's Al Cirullo. Right. He is a helicopter, apparently.
Oh,
he is a helicopter. Okay, hold on.
Can't miss him if you go down the list.
He's full cast. We don't see him in the first half of the cast.
No,
Al Cirullo.
You have to do more.
He's a helicopter. How weird.
He's a helicopter.
That's. I wonder how he gets credited in all these movies if he's a helicopter.
It's funny because he's credited as playing helicopter pilot.
Right.
But it's like, it's about the best picture of me they can get.
What you're going to see. The captain in your movie? This is what Al Cirullo looks like. Sorry.
Wow. That's excellent. Good.
Back to the madness.
Yeah, the madness. Yeah. The madness that is the Manhattan Project. So a couple of bits of data here. Marshall Brickman is the director and the writer. And what makes him unique in this case is this feels like such a throwaway, stupid 80s movie. But this dude wrote like a bunch of really important things like Annie Hall. Or not Annie Hall. Is it Annie Hall? Hold on.
Annie Hall. Yeah.
Yeah. Annie Hall. Bunch of other ones. Like the guy's
I
got like.
I want to say the only Woody Allen film that was nominated for an Academy Award, Manhattan. Or am I incorrect on that?
Well, they've been nominated. I don't think they've. It may be the only one that won.
Maybe it's the only one that won.
What was his obsession with Manhattan then? Because 79 Manhattan.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. He's really into it. He also did Jersey Boys not long ago, a couple of years ago, 2014. I wrote it. So the guy knows how to write. And this just feels like he farted and captured it in a bottle. Like.
I think I'm going to say this movie had a lot of really good elements. And I think it just suffers from no audience. I can't imagine who this would appeal to. I enjoyed it in some ways, and I thought it went along well. It made me feel uncomfortable, and if you were trying to make me feel uncomfortable, good job.
Yeah, they did that. But the most uncomfortable moment in the movie for me was when, I mean, it actually made me squirm, was when the car had the thing on it and the idiot security guard's out there by the crate looking for it and hearing the like that actually genuinely got me, man. Like I was like,
but he's old and deaf.
Right.
No, but it's such a Laurel and Hardy thing, right? Where you know, you've got a tree and the bad guy's on one side of the tree and the good guy's on the other, and they look and it's like mirror images looking around the tree at the opposite time, and then they do back and turn the other way and do the same thing.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. And then for him to be able to have such a bad time driving that he really, that scene seemed like he could only go backwards and forwards. Yet the very next scene, he's able to steer that thing into a drain pipe that he can't even see.
Right. Yeah, well, that worked out great.
Don't get on the remote control.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Never mind that a 17-year-old builds a working nuclear bomb. He could drive a remote control car sight unseen. That is the most outrageous thing in the film. That
kind of is, yeah.
I love the scene where it pulls up on one side of the crate and the little driver looks back and forth.
Yeah.
Like he went that extra step and added the little... It was kind of entertaining, though.
What if it's just a movie ahead of its time? Because nowadays, he would have had a GoPro on the remote control car and be watching in real time on this heads-up display on the remote.
Yeah. It would have been a drone anyway. It wouldn't have been a car. It would have been a drone. It would have flown it through the ceiling.
That's what I'm saying. Like, all this film needs is a little updating, and it'll start to make sense.
Oh, can you guys... that reminds me. When they're on the bus or where... I don't know where they are, but they take the headphone out of the guy's ear who's watching TV on the bus.
This is your gross moment, right?
No, it's not my gross moment. That didn't bother me, but what TV was that? How do you have a big giant TV in your lap in 1986?
I used to have one of those little portable TVs.
It had a battery life of 10 minutes.
Yeah, but it was color and everything. That surprised me.
How cool is the fact, and jury should love this, the fact that it's promoting Action News back in 1980?
Yes, I saw that. I noticed that.
You would like that.
I want to ask Scott how taking an earbud out of a sleeping... gross looking dude and put it straight in your ear is not the thing that grossed you out.
That is not the thing that grossed
out. That's not the grossest thing.
I did 12 times.
Hey,
this thing grossed out Scott.
We're here right now. Let's discuss it.
Is it Cynthia Nixon's teeth?
No, they're fine. Her teeth are fine. I can play a song or a sound and you guys will know. You want to hear the sound first and then you'll know it's so gross. Okay, here you go. Where is it? It's called Grossest. Oh, where did I put this? Oh, Grossest Sound in the Movie. No, wait, that's not it. Is this it?
I think I know what it's going to be.
No, that's not it. Hold on. Okay. Here we go. I found it. All right. So this is the scene. And Dunaway knows because he made a GIF out of it. But this grossed me out for a couple of reasons. So here you go.
Nuclear warheads.
All right. Number one. You should never... How is that a method of getting the concentrated orange juice out of the can by blowing it?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was wondering what that that came from. But now I hear, now that you say what that is hilarious.
It's disgusting to do that in the first place. Second of all, you're blowing on it. Everyone's going to be drinking that. Knock it off. That's gross.
No one's going to drink that. Did you notice she didn't do anything with it?
Oh,
she did that.
Yeah.
She didn't start it up to nothing. She's like, nope.
No, she's like, I'm not drinking that.
Here's the thing. I just want to explain to the younger generations. So we used to, instead of buying orange juice, like you, when you think of orange juice, you think of something that we didn't used to get when we were little.
Yeah.
Right.
We used to get this frozen cylinder that had this disgusting bright orange slop in it.
Yeah.
And we would pour it into a pitcher. It would slide out in a frozen cylinder into a pitcher.
Yep.
And then you'd cover it with water and then you would stir for several days. Mom,
and then you'd give up.
Mom wasn't about to let you use the blender. This movie is full of shit.
Yeah.
You never use the blender.
Well, you know,
you gotta clean the blender.
Yeah.
The first mistake in that whole thing is that the frozen cylinder, once you get the orange juice concentrate out, you have to then use that can to fill it four more times. And if you cut off both sides of that can, you can't do that.
Yeah. Right.
And don't forget, you got to lick that lid that comes off.
No, you don't. No.
That's always a mistake. Like, oh my God, it's concentrated.
Never do that. That's a terrible idea.
Come on. Yeah.
Just listen to that. Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I kind of miss frozen orange juice concentrate.
You can still get it.
Still get it, but Tina buys like real orange juice, and there's gonna be somebody that writes and says, "Well, it is real orange juice. It's just concentrated and frozen. They take a lot of the water out."
Yeah, and you're right, and that's fine. And they have other kinds too. You can get like grape juice that way, and you know, there's all kinds of flavors you can get.
The limeade, limeade is great.
Ooh, that sounds all right. Out of a concentrate?
Limeade is fantastic. Still the best way to get that stuff.
Does it have, is it all pulpy and stuff?
It is. It's got some lime pulp in there.
I like lime pulp a lot. I do not like orange pulp. But for whatever reason.
I'm with you, Scott.
Yeah. What is the deal? Right, why can't all citrus fruits have the same pulp consistency and texture? That's what I'm asking. Lemon and lime both are pretty close.
Dear God.
Yeah. But
why is orange?
I just appreciated that this movie stops every now and then for these kids to get some vitamins from fruits.
Right.
Just, every now and then.
A little apple break. And, yeah.
Forget that you've got a live nuke in your bag. Let's stop for a moment and have some orange concentrate.
Back about this.
And really quickly, I'll throw this out there for those of you out there in the listening audience who are drinkers. Go get the frozen limeade.
Mm-hmm.
Put that in a pitcher. Put 4 bottles of Corona beer and then several shots, however many you want, of tequila. And it makes amazing Corona-ritas.
Wow.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm in.
But only if you open the bottom of it and go.
Exactly. Because you can open both sides if you're doing that recipe because you don't need to add any water.
Yeah.
The water comes from the other things, ice cubes.
Yeah, you just blow it out.
That's what it sounds like coming out, too.
Geez.
Yeah, see how bad?
Yeah,
it's like you know what it's like. Yeah, we're mating these cows, and Billy Bob over there is done. Okay, great.
This was one of the most realistic sound effects we've ever heard, though. Mm-hmm. They just recorded what that sounds like.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, there's no Foley work there.
No. It was probably somebody's Foley idea, and they said, hey, let's just film it. Because it's just disgusting.
While we're in the kitchen, let's talk about this weirdo and how he makes chocolate milk.
Right.
When he scrapes off the top of that rounded spoon.
Those metal teaspoons aren't a teaspoon. Aren't a measured teaspoon.
Right.
So to do that and then slice it up. And, come on, you're using that damn nail file for everything. And now you're going to touch my chocolate powder with that?
That is precisely how my mom used to measure powders.
But and not I with a nail file, wrong. Right? Not with a
I'm,
nail
no, I'm
file.
I'm just saying that made total sense to me because that's how my mom used to do it. Because again, my mom was too cheap to use the blender for the concentrated orange juice. She was also too cheap to dirty a measuring spoon when the spoon you were going to stir with was good enough.
Anyway, you just put some in the thing and you pour some milk on it.
You're going to be adding more anyway. You know it's never enough.
Yeah. That seemed a little, I'd never seen that.
It was a way of setting up the fact that this is his go-to tool.
And he's a scientist, and I think that's actually a butter knife, right? And I didn't like it because it was to imply, first of all, that he's kind of a scientist type, but the fact he's standing there talking to his mom about drugs.
Heroin, mom.
Mom, how about some heroin, lady? The thing about all of that is I know what they were trying to establish, but as Dunaway pointed out in a couple of gifs he made, that and the orange juice blow are signs of serial killer. Like you're a weird, you're really weird. You're weird. Yeah. And that girl's unwitting accomplice who one day is going to find out this was the wrong train to tie your wagon to, you know?
He'd make a great supervillain, though. I would like to write a supervillain around this guy.
Well, good luck, because he's not doing anything these days. That guy did not go on to do much.
That's how you redo this movie, right? Yeah. If this movie's ripe for a remake, you just say, let's actually make the kid a budding psychopath, and this is kind of the thing that pushes him over the edge. And all you need to do is add some shaking and some sweating to that scene at the end where he's in the in the lab with Lithgow, and you've got it.
Killed it. Exactly right. By the way, he looked to me the entire time, drove me crazy. Finally occurred to me who he looked like to me. He looks like Corey Haim and Jesse Eisenberg got in a smush. And that's him.
Okay. The Jesse Eisenberg is
Christopher Atkins in there too from Blue Lagoon.
Oh yeah, a little bit for sure. But he's like this weird, like I kept going, what have I seen him in since? Gotta be something. And I never could find anything. Now the one weird casting bit, and I gotta find his name. Where is it? The kid, here he is, Robert Sean Leonard. He played Max. I guess Max was one of the nerds.
He's the buddy that she calls to kind of get everything together.
Oh, right. Okay. That's the kid. He's most famous from Dead Poets Society. He's the very tragic character.
He's way more famous from House than Dead Poets.
Well, I never watched House. But from Dead Poets Society, he's the kid whose dad, Red, from that 70s show, is such a douche and ends up committing suicide. Do you remember that kid?
Oh, right.
Yes. He finds all this poetry and then realizes his dad's a dick and then shoots himself or whatever. That's him. And that's all I know him from. I didn't know he was from House. Is he good on House? What's the deal on
him? He's on the thing for like six seasons. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't,
Somebody likes him.
I saw Randy apparently really likes House. I never saw an episode of House.
It's not me. Everybody, you're the one in the world who hasn't watched House.
I've only watched half a season of House and I said, this is not for me.
Yeah.
You know why? Because every episode is the same. House gets a weird mystery. He nearly kills the patient. Almost kills them entirely, blows up their testicles or their eyes pop out, and then he goes, oh wait, I got it figured out, let me go take some drugs.
Yep. And everyone
Well, come on, I mean, CSI, you know, they do
same
the interviews
problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Murder happens at the beginning, pun delivered, opening credits, whoever they interview at
some
the 22 at the 22 minute mark.
Yep.
After, and then they're going to interview several people after that. But whoever they interview at the 22-minute mark is who ends up being the one who did it.
Yeah, they're literally procedurals, and so was he. Yeah. But here's the thing. Here's the thing with House. It was always about brain stuff, and that stuff freaks me out. So first of all, I don't like that. I don't like to find out, oh, I got a weird tumor. And then I just remember the only episode I saw was the one where Felicia Day was bald. And that was it. Sorry, Randy.
You had a point.
Yeah. What were you going to say?
If we're going to complain about entertainment being formulaic, we need to just shut up right now. Close up and go home.
No, you're right.
You're right. You're going to watch some formulaic crap.
You're right. But I've gotten less. What's the word?
But
I'm less patient with that stuff these days than I used to.
Right. The question is, though, do you like the formula or not? And the House formula, I do not like.
Yeah.
Because
I love the House formula. And
right.
And it's worth watching to get to the fourth season when Felicia Day appears in the best episode of the whole series.
Yeah.
So.
It's, well, okay. I mean, yes, maybe. I don't know. I've only seen that one. But I just know she got mad. She used to get mad at me when I'd say, hey, you're that lady, the bald lady from House, I'd say. Because that's what I do. And I don't think she appreciated it. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's move on to this point, which is the setup time with the canister and all that montage stuff is eternal. They need to. This is a problem in this movie. They filled way too much time with him working around the place and doing A-team moments, and even the musical stuff where he's being
a
student.
The whole thing. Yeah. It's the becoming a nuclear scientist montage.
Yeah,
because he's studying, he's learning all this stuff.
He's circling stuff, highlighting lines and books.
I don't think you can do this in a couple weeks before the science fair. I think this is like a many-year study project.
Yeah.
And at some point, I would think during that whole process, you learn what DOE stands for.
Yeah, yeah, or you know who? What were the other famous names he didn't know? That drove me crazy.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Woodward and Bernstein.
Yeah, Woodward and Bernstein. Is like, what? Hello? It's 1986. You know who that is. I don't care who you are.
Little knowledge is very dangerous, is what they're trying to say.
I know how to make a nuclear device, but I don't know shit about nothing else.
That's right.
I don't even know. I don't even know how to make orange juice like a human.
Motion detectors do.
Well, they do.
The kid's genius was very focused. It was not very broad at all.
Yeah.
And the thing that he really didn't get was the, you know, like the world around him.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's the movie is trying to convince you that he would have never thought, oh, when I unveil my nuclear bomb, everybody's going to run out of the room and call the cops. Yeah. Like it never, that's supposed to be what he never thought of, which is insane.
It's completely insane.
How irradiated are those?
Okay, so I thought about this a lot the last 24 hours. I've been thinking about this nonstop.
All right.
I was absolutely convinced on this watching. I haven't seen the movie in about 25 years, but I was absolutely convinced that there was a very important sequence coming in the film where we dealt with radiation, and it never happened. And I was shocked at the end. I'm like, where's all the radiation scenes where they freak out? And I stopped and I thought a minute. Okay, so we're talking about plutonium. It's a very particular thing. Blah blah blah. And the film makes sense in not getting into the radiation problem. But what movie am I thinking of? Would somebody tell me what's the radiation teenagers movie? I don't know. I can't figure it out.
Well, whenever
Ninja Turtles.
Whenever I think of this kind of thing, I think of The Rock and those stupid green balls. And I know they're not radiation.
And it's funny that green is the Fluorescent green is the universal symbol for nuclear.
Yeah, something's dangerous. Don't touch it. Right. It's green.
Exactly.
So that actually made some sense. So they're generating plutonium, right? So they're like bombarding uranium with deuterons or something.
Yeah,
I get it. So they're keeping it. They're keeping the plutonium in little tiny bits, and they're keeping it suspended because it deteriorates really fast. If you just put plutonium out in the air, it very energetically degrades.
Yeah.
And so I get they're suspending it in some sort of solution that protects it from degrading. Right.
Flubber. Flubber.
Right. Yeah. Flubber. Exactly.
Yep.
I get that. What I don't get why I know that there's a missing radiation scene.
What do we call that? Right. The Mandela effect or whatever? Maybe you got a Mandela effect going where
it could be. Yeah.
You're sure maybe it's there.
Maybe they cut a scene where he was throwing up in the bathroom. Maybe just.
If you get enough plutonium-239 together, it just you reach what's called a critical mass and it starts doing nuclear fission on its own.
Yeah.
I found
that throw up scene, by the way. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Which is why it's in little tiny flakes suspended in a solution. Why do these flakes suspended in solution need to be stored in this elaborate cage in
bottles
with a robot?
With little lucite tubes that each one is plugged into.
Yeah.
I don't get that. Like there were a lot of lab things that bothered me because I used to work in a chemistry lab. The first time we see the lab, there's about two dozen men working in there. I'm sorry, no chemistry
this
lab.
This movie was like right home for Randy.
Right. It's too. That is a too many cooks problem that they can't. You don't see that in labs like that ever.
And so on and on and on. There were so many things like why do we have the laser in the same room where we're storing the plutonium and all these things.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're putting it in these bottles just so and storing them in these clear walls just so it just bugged the hell out of me.
Yeah. It was all very odd for sure.
I would have revoked Lithgow's laser privileges like day one.
Yeah.
Dude, stop turning your
laser key or whatever. I mean, and the kid is just such a genius in there, but I just feel like any minute he's like, all right, laser this and this, that, and now I can make a nuke. And then I expect in any minute to go, oh, I think I made a poo-poo because I don't know anything else about life.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, the kid is able to do something that I think would take hours, like adjusting several mirrors to have a laser go towards a hole he's torn in the wall.
Yeah.
You would turn on the guiding light, and then you would walk around the room for days trying to get it to go where you want.
Just each one. It's like, oh, crud, I moved that one. Now it's not pointing at this one. Crap. All right, I have to start back over. I mean,
but that's movie magic, right?
To the film's credit, it did feel like it took that long. Like, it was way too long.
And then the worst science in the movie. The worst science in the movie is that he cuts through the wall with a laser that cuts through that big carbon plate earlier.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Everyone in town would see it because it would fly right through the forest and into the neighboring hillside.
Yeah, they didn't talk about the four dogs and three chickens it impaled on its way out there.
Yeah.
I do love that idea. Like, I did a cartoon a long time ago about Mario's mushroom, the ones you miss when they come out of the pipe and you miss it just goes off and you never see it again. The idea that this thing's just traveling through town, like past people, like what the hell is that?
At the very least, it would have set the forest on fire. I'm glad there was a rainstorm going on. It's very convenient. Because it would have burned that forest.
I have a green laser that I try to use with the dog because dogs are funny with lasers, you know, and she doesn't see it. I can't figure out what the deal is. I guess
it's green.
Is that why? Because
colorblind.
She can see the red lasers fine and chases it, but you do it with the green and she's like, I don't know what the hell that is. She didn't even think there's anything there. I don't know why I brought that up, but there you go.
Hey, by the way, worst puzzle ever.
Puzzle ever.
John Lithgow brings genius
what
boy.
The hell?
Oh, right. Yeah, the little roly ball puzzle. You got to get all four balls into each of the four corners.
Yeah, what was that? That doesn't make you smart. It makes him lucky. Slammed it on the table. That was dumb. That was so dumb.
Look here, Kid Guyver. If you don't stay out of people's glove boxes, I'm going to kick your trash.
Kid Guyver. That's a good name.
How many glove boxes? Okay, I got to ask a question.
And his magical nail file.
Yeah. He was in and out of so many glove boxes. I don't know. It was a lot. So there was more glove. I wanted to know what that was supposed to represent. Anyway, I want to ask Randy something first before we give us your bit. You say you had this car that this girl drove.
No, hers is newer than mine. Hers is like an 85. Mine was like an 81.
All right. Okay. So around that time, did we have separate keys? I mean, I know we had car door key and then an ignition key, but did we also have a third key for
glove
boxes?
Glove box key was this little thing.
What was wrong with us
this
during
little
the 80s?
Tin key. It was
I don't remember that at
key.
All. That seemed really odd to me because I don't remember having that. But then again, well, I mean, my car, I had a 76 Maverick I drove in 1986. Maverick. So in 86, I'm driving this 10-year-old piece of garbage. And it didn't have that. It did have a
Mine
gas
was,
cap.
I had a, what color was yours?
My God, I had a locking glove box in my Volkswagen, New Beetle from just a few years ago.
What's those Germans?
They don't trust anybody.
Locking glove box now, but I mean, it all. I just have one key for everything.
Yeah,
Yeah. It always uses the same. Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. Like you can't. The valet key doesn't retract into the thing, and it doesn't open the glove box.
The valet key, what's that?
So you got a valet key, a separate key that you give to the valet guy. So your normal key, at least on the Volkswagen, on my new car, or my current Kia Soul, you've got a key fob and you push a little button and the key metal part zoom, flips out of it like a switchblade, right?
Oh. Right? Well, okay.
You got that. That's
that makes
work
sense.
Work with me here because that's the easy thing.
Yeah.
The valet key doesn't have a little pop out. It doesn't have any buttons on it. It just looks like a normal key with a rubberized handle on one end and the metal sticking out of it.
Right.
And that one you can use just to start the car and to lock the door from the outside.
Okay.
And that
makes sense.
That's one you keep with you that you give to the valet.
That makes sense. That way you've also got your key so that if they lose it or something, you're not screwed.
I'm so done with keys. We're not going to be able to tell my car open.
You can't. Well, some do. Just use your phone now. But
After watching this movie, I had this thought. Everybody is keeping everything important, including your passcode card, in their glove compartments. Apparently, the glove compartment used to be the most important place in the world. I thought, oh, no, what am I keeping in my glove compartment? So I went outside, and I opened up the glove compartment in my car.
Yeah.
And I did a little assessment. Here's what I found.
All right.
Tons of napkins.
Yeah, yes, always.
Air
always.
Pressure gauge.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The two different lug keys that keep people from stealing my wheels. I don't know why there's two.
You will lose and hate yourself forever.
Yeah.
And if
five you're... missing pages for the world according to Garb.
Right? I found several CDs of Blizzard game music, and I found every receipt from every trip to Jiffy Lube that anyone has ever made in the history of the universe.
Yeah.
Glove boxes
cannot use my glove compartment to break into anything.
Yeah. I defy anybody listening to this podcast to let us know that they actually have gloves in their glove compartment.
Yeah, true story.
Oh, really good question, actually. I'm trying to think.
Like, when did we stop keeping gloves in our glove compartments?
Well, when we quit driving, when we quit having driving gloves.
Over here?
Yeah, what, like the 20s or whenever the hell that happened?
And was that the only thing you stored in the glove compartment? Because it was the glove compartment, right? Don't put the tire pressure gauge in there. That's the glove compartment.
I can tell you what's in mine. Mine is a half-assed manual for the car. A broken
manual,
with pages ripped out.
It's just not good. It's just not a good manual. It's a piece of crap. I don't know why they made it. And then in there is like an
IKEA diagram.
I would like to know what an ass manual for the car is.
A not entirely working air gauge. And then the other thing, I have a lot of Taco Bell sauce packets in there.
Why do you put them in there?
Just throw them in there because, you know, you're like, oh, wow, they really gave me a lot this time. Throw them in the glove box, but done.
How do you put them in there, Randy?
Because sometime you're going to go to Taco Bell and they're not going to give you sauce. Yeah. And you're going to get a mile away. I've got the sauce.
Yeah.
Sometime you're going to go to McDonald's. And you're going to be like, oh, you know what this could use is some Diablo sauce.
Yeah. Let me tell you what happened to me once. I got so in traffic once, I had to do two things I would never swear I would do normally. I peed in a bottle because I couldn't get out. Had to pee so bad. And I...
Is this bottle large enough?
I ate three packets of Taco Bell sauce and two packets of ketchup in the car because I was starving.
The bottle... I want you to know the bottle never feels large enough in the moment.
No,
in that moment,
no it
always
doesn't.
Think, I'm going to end up with this, and it's not going to be enough space.
Yeah, it was a 16-ounce bottle, and it went right up to the end. I mean, I think I had to hold it toward the end. Plus, it's a little tiny opening, and, you know.
Oh, my God.
It's rough. And then first thing it is, I got back, I put it on my neighbor's car because I like teasing her. So her name was Sally, and she's the only Sally I've ever known. Anyway, I walked next door, and I said, hey, look what I got. Bonk, put it on the back thing of her car and walked away. She was, like, so mad at me. Anyway, yeah, pee in a bottle, eat your ketchup, you'll survive.
Right?
It's so, good advice. It's good advice.
Yeah. Oh, so one more bit of car question. Did you guys catch the DeLorean in the neighbor's yard?
Yeah, in the opening. Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
see that.
In the opening, there's a little DeLorean in the neighbor's yard. I'm like, why didn't Psychopath steal that? I mean, he stole everything else.
Yeah, why not? And he kept acting like all. That's the other thing about his stealing is he never acted like. He acted like the whole time it was just his. It's his playground. Like, well, whatever. It's my stuff. I get to, you know.
Yeah.
That's the pathological part. But yeah, that car was there, and I read. So I saw it, and then when I was reading trivia later, it pointed it out and said, "This was clearly a nod to the." Previous year's release of Back to the Future. I'm like, well, no. Also, there were DeLoreans around, you dumbasses.
Yeah, everybody exactly. DeLorean. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's yeah, it. And there's not really a good thematic connection between those two movies.
No.
Like, the people making Manhattan Project probably went and saw the movie and liked it, but that doesn't, you know, there's
that's
not
an
like
expensive thing to try and just get for your film to as yeah. a nod to another film.
Yeah, there's right. no reason well,
and the
to
nod,
do it.
I get, what's the nod? Fission? Mr. Fission? I don't know.
And if it was a nod, why didn't they make it, like, prevalent? I mean, I just happened to catch it as it was going by. I was like, wait, was that a DeLorean? Was that?
I'm not even sure they planned it. It may have just freaking been there. Yeah. It's like saying, oh, hey, look at all
these guns. Those guns they had were a nod to The Godfather.
They like got guns, right?
Every movie I've seen with a Volkswagen Bug in it is a nod to the Herbie movies. Nope. No, they're not. They're just driving around, you know?
Hey, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, go ahead.
So Psychopath is in his kitchen and his mom comes in with John Lithgow.
Yeah.
And he's been cutting up cantaloupes. So was that kind of like an American Pie moment and he got caught, you know? Was he like trying to have
the whole thing of
cantaloupes?
Like cutting up those cantaloupes? Oh my God, I've got to hide these. He's going to figure out that I've stolen nuclear material.
That's crazy. I'm cutting up some cantaloupe.
It's less American Pie moment and more a moment of Richard Dreyfuss arranging the mashed potatoes to look like Devil's Tower.
Yep.
By the way, did you guys see the teaser?
For what?
For the new one.
No, there's a new third.
Close Encounters?
There's a new Close Encounters. Shut up.
Yeah.
I'm into what? That. When's this happening? For real?
I don't know. This is the teaser the other day. Let me see. I'll find the video.
How many third kind or the how many kinds are we at now? The fourth kind?
Four and a half.
Dude, hold on. You've got me all excited now. Close
Encounters. The third kind is flying back into theaters.
Oh, just the original? Release? No, that's Wait lame. Who cares?
And that's what I was thinking. Wait a minute. The teaser was all teasing me like there was something new coming out. You just tell me this is a re-release. Screw you.
I got Now look at Close Encounters, not only a pivotal film, blah, blah, blah. Okay, it's not a reboot or a sequel or anything. It's just the old thing. Jeez, Brian, you got me all excited for a minute.
Teaser's fun, if nothing else.
My wiener moved. Now I'm...
Let's get back to this movie's weird relationship with sex. Because the whole film... You basically have Cynthia Nixon coming on to our main character.
Yeah.
And trying to initiate. She's like, over and over, she's like, hey, let's go from first base to home plate right now. And he doesn't even kiss her back. He's just like for every teenage boy that's ever existed, that would be the end of the story. That would be it. He would be sequestered in a bedroom for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't understand this movie. Why this movie keeps doing that?
Yeah, I love doing that. It was its favorite thing to do to you. It wanted to bug you.
It's doing it to me.
It wanted to make, life hard. So what was the other thing I wanted to mention? There's a great quote here I wrote down. I wrote, quote, everything he does looks like total bullshit to me, is what I wrote.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
But you didn't think it was beautiful that he constructed such a lovely device?
No,
like, wow, salad bowls? Yeah. And he came up with a
plexiglass case around the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Like, it wasn't bullshit at all. That thing was gorgeous. It's some kind of miracle that he made this thing.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's weird.
No time to kiss. Got to make nuclear device.
Yeah, he was always wanting to make out with her, though. That was always on the menu. For sure.
Everybody was wanting to make out with her. The nerds, the security guards, him. I think his mom was into her. I don't know.
That reminds me of the other trope. Those other nerds at the thing, at the science fair, turning from...
the lone gunman or the four horsemen.
Thank you. There you got it. That's it. There's always those guys. They're like the kids in E.T. that want to help Elliot out at the end. It's just like, this band of misfits are going to get this job done. I'm like, you barely know him. You don't know him at all. In fact, this entire time he's lied to you about hamsters. And now you're just going to like throw all of your young lives away, really, legally, by helping him. That was so... Ugh, so contrived.
It was really bad, and it made you wonder, what were they pitching this as a film for preteens? Like, preteens were going to come see this and identify with the nerds that are going to go up against the army? Yeah. What?
I don't remember. I don't remember this. So this is, we're now living in a PG-13 world, but this movie was PG, I think. Is it PG-13?
Yeah, I think it's PG.
It is.
It had the one use of the F-bomb.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about. That seemed odd to me.
Yeah, you could get away with one.
Can you do that?
That was PG-13.
But could you do that? And I don't feel like 86 we were doing F-bombs yet in PG-13.
No, it was one.
Did they re-rate this because PG-13 didn't happen until Red Dawn, right? Which was...
No, that was like 84. So okay. this is definitely post that. Yeah.
This is 86.
Yeah, this is definitely 86. So you're definitely in that area. Let's see. I'm going to try to find the rating here. Oh, PG-13. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, now you can get away with two effers, but I feel like I feel like it was always just...
You can say it in a kid's morning show now. I mean, come on.
I mean, it went from like some PG movies had boobs in it and...
Cookie,
you know,
I want F and cookie.
But it felt like F was... Oh, I'm glad you said that. This director, Marshall Brickman. Brickman.
Yeah.
Brickman.
He directed The Muppet Show, Sex and Violence, a TV movie in 1975. Does anyone know what that is?
No. Is it like, it sounds, almost sounds like this. a documentary or something.
It says the original Muppet Show pilot, the guests included Seven Deadly Sins. It was called Sex and Violence. I'm reading down here. Jim Henson, Frank Oz, all those guys.
Well, some of the earliest Muppet stuff or Jim Henson stuff was on Saturday Night Live, which was supposed to be edgy and raw and that sort of thing. So before it became a kids thing, there probably was a consideration. Oh, do we take this down a blue satire route, or do we take this down a children's television route?
Yeah, maybe
they made the right choice, because it wouldn't have lasted long if they had to stay
totally
an adult.
Made the right choice.
Yeah, but the fact that it's called Sex and Violence, The Muppet Show, Sex and Violence—that's crazy. It's crazy to me. Anyway. So he's got that in his resume.
I would like to see it.
Yeah, I'd see it.
I would really like to see it.
It's on YouTube. Congratulations.
Okay.
All right, you can see it now.
I'm going to watch it.
Turns out YouTube is here for you. I've got a load of clips here. Let's play them. For example, I got this one right here where it's the plutonium deal.
It's the purest plutonium in the universe. Pretty, isn't it?
How do you know that? How do you know that's the prettiest or the best plutonium in the universe?
Okay, you don't. And secondly, no scientist would actually say this.
Yeah. But even if he did.
Which isotope of plutonium is it, John Lithgow? Yeah. You would definitely call it by its isotope number.
Yeah. Plus how many, you know, planets and other heavenly bodies have you been on where you can verify that this is the best plutonium
possible? At least one or two rocks from the sun.
Well, sure.
That didn't actually bother me. That purest in the universe did not bother me at all because they had... Because, you know, he knows that plutonium degrades a ton. It's really hard to keep it around. You have to take extraordinary lengths to have anything approaching 100% purity. Hmm. And so, like, I get that. Like, unless there is a civilization somewhere else in the universe making pure plutonium, which, you know, he's saying they're not as good as us. Yeah. Like, I totally get that.
Well, but in an infinite universe, I think that there's a good chance that there's another guy named John Lithgow, except in that one he has a mustache in this part.
Yeah.
That's the only difference. Let's see. Separated, what? Oh, I don't know what this is. Here you go.
My husband and I are separated.
Oh!
Oh, yeah, no. You know what it is. Every time Lithgow made a weird noise like this, I tried to capture it.
Good.
Because it made you think of Third Rock from the Sun, right?
Well, here's another one.
Oh, wait.
Okay, and here's another one. All right. See, he just keeps making these weird sounds, and I don't know why that is. He's a weirdo. I like him.
That's his acting style. He just doesn't do it as Winston Churchill. Thank God.
No. Oh my gosh, he was so good in that.
He was
so good. All right. I found a clip here. This is Ibbot on his date, his prom date, trying to impress his date. You're trying to impress her here. Okay. So this is what you say to impress her.
I just cut through a steel plate with a beam of light.
That's pretty. I'm surprised she didn't keep going out with you because. That's impressive, dude.
That's how good I am, baby.
That's great. Can I compliment the film on having the principal actors actually in the shot when a real laser cuts through a real carbon plate? That was cool.
That's pretty cool.
I was surprised that they did that. But, I mean, clearly someone with access to some real good equipment, like, gave them the opportunity to film that. I don't know why. It just blew me away when I realized, oh, wow, they're actually there. They're actually, you know, like, it may have been a dummy switch that he threw or something, but they're, like, feet away from this little stunt.
It wasn't like I always expect that stuff to be, in this era anyway, like, hand-drawn, kind of like we saw in the Last Dragon deal with the fighting at the end. It's like, I always expect them to be frame-by-frame animating those kinds of effects. But, no, this was a straight-up laser. And it looked really good.
They were in a real lab doing the thing.
Yeah, my dog watched the movie with me and said, I don't see anything here. I don't see a thing. Here's an awkward conversation. No, not that. Here's a robot thing that made me laugh.
Oh, that's lubricating oil for the robot.
Robot.
Yes, robot.
Come on.
Where are you from if you say robot? I would like to know.
Veronica's house. I don't know. Yeah. Something like that. I have no idea. My dad said robot, but I never did. Or won't. I refuse to.
Is it a New York thing? I mean, Lithgow is from New York State.
Right, robot. Right. They were in Ithaca, so, right?
I don't know. I feel like it's just wrong, and people should correct people when they do it, because this should never be robot. Come on. Robot. Mm-hmm. It's robot. All. There's no
that's,
you.
That's how it was in the 1940s and 50s. No. Like, that's how people said it.
Yeah.
Not even that, because on the day the Earth stood still, what year was that? Because she says robot in the movie.
It depends. That's why my point is it's... And maybe Randy's right. Maybe
some people think that second O is pronounced like the upside down E.
Oh, right.
Schwa.
Is that what that's called? What'd you call it?
Schwa.
The schwa. Is that called a schwa?
It's called a schwa, isn't it?
I don't know.
That's what I'm going to call it. Schwa. The schwa.
The schwa.
The schwa.
That's a fun word to say.
Yeah.
Here's an awkward conversation.
Well, thank you very much for dinner. It was very stimulating.
What, are you leaving? No dessert?
Sorry, I have a date.
Ugh.
With your glove box.
I'm going to go stick it into the keyhole of your glove box.
Did I already? Oh, yeah. All right, we played that. I'm not playing that again.
All John Lithgow wants to do is get with mom. Let him get with mom and get out of the way.
It seems like he did. The kid seemed to be wanting to make room for it. But also
The kid goes on this vendetta, like this evil... It's amazing how you can see in that scene, you can see the kid realizing, I hate this guy. I'm going to ruin the world for some reason.
I got the opposite impression. I thought the whole time he was trying to say, yeah, here's, I'm going to sneak away. Now you guys are alone. And like I felt like he wanted them to find each other. He was very busy stealing things.
Only with the end result of keeping him occupied while...
Oh,
yeah, while we go rip,
ma'am,
we go
show him your boobies.
Break into his car. It was breaking and entering the glove compartment.
Dunaway, did you just say, "Mom, show him your boobies"? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Wow. Classic.
Wow. All right, Zap Your Gonads says
classic
this.
Oedipus.
Here's your security guard talking about gonads.
I hate to go in there, Charlie. They got stuff in there that zaps your gonads right out.
Gonads. He calls them gonads.
Gonads.
Yeah.
Robot gonads.
The single hardest thing for me to get past was the fact that second guard was able to find more lug nuts. I have been able to find a free lug nut in my life. Yeah. I've never seen one sitting around somewhere by itself.
Nope.
I knew there was going to be a joke shot of her going, oh, they were in my pocket all along.
Yeah.
Right.
When once the time had elapsed, why didn't that happen?
Yeah.
So, it would have helped me a lot.
I just want, when she was running around saying, get your hands off me, I wanted lug nuts to go flying out of her pocket and like just scatter all over the floor. Yeah. That's
people,
what I wanted.
People who make bad movies, people who make bad movies don't anticipate what we're paying attention to.
Yeah, right. No, they're not. Well, especially this show. Here's another set of, I thought were some of the grossest sounds in the movie. It's not a gross moment, but the sounds are gross. So here you go. It's him squeezing the shampoo into the thing. And
into the bottle. It's almost sound like somebody walking on a gravel road.
Yeah. Ugh. It sounds like, well, whatever. Old people doing it is what it sounded like to me.
How would you know?
I don't know. It's all my huge collection of granny. They call it granny porn, don't they? Yeah. Here is, I don't know, help me understand this phrase. Help me dissect this. Here you go.
You know something? This jack isn't going to work. This jack is Mickey Mouse.
What does that mean?
Oh, you know, it's a like common
something
phrase.
That's flaky is Mickey Mouse.
It's flaky, small, inconsequential.
Your spare tire is usually like, that's a Mickey Mouse spare.
Really?
Yeah. I would like to believe that there are people listening to this podcast in upstate New York going, how do you not recognize this accent and phrasing? This is all normal.
It must be. I've never heard it. And you guys have all heard it. So I'm in the... Well, I remember my dad sometimes saying something was a little Mickey Mouse. He'd say, it's a little Mickey Mouse, isn't it? But I don't remember saying a thing is Mickey Mouse. Like, this jack is Mickey Mouse.
Ineffective, trivial, insignificant.
Ironically, I say things are jacked now. So something is
wow.
Backwards.
Yeah,
that jack is Mickey Mouse. That Mickey Mouse is jacked.
Yeah, that Mickey Mouse is jacked, dude. And I would even say, this jack is jacked. That's what I'd say. Here's a creepy dude talking about girls in a way you probably shouldn't. Fire this guy. Don't let him work there anymore. Here you go.
That's some sweetie, huh? Come on now, you're a married man.
Hey, a man can still have a little snack between meals, can he?
Not when she's 16, you douchebag!
Yeah, she's 16 or 17. We're led to believe that he's like 25.
Yeah, right? Maybe. Maybe. Yeah. And that's okay when she's 25 and you're 35, but not before, you weirdo.
Right.
I mean, she was flirting with him pretty hard, but I didn't need this line. The line doesn't help the movie at all.
Nothing like just a little statutory rape snack, am I right?
Yeah, it's just gross.
How's that coffee?
Yeah, it's a little sugary.
And by the way, if you, I will guarantee you, anyone who is a professional security guard would tell you they are constantly aware if someone is trying to manipulate them.
Yeah,
if a complete stranger comes up to a security guard and makes idle talk, they start their you know radar turns on, like they start looking around for where the
pardon me, but I got a flat tire.
Yeah, could you help me?
Can I please come into your secret nuclear facility?
All right, I gotta cap that one out. That's pretty funny. Here's some music. This music was all over the place.
Yes,
I hate it.
I love putting C4. Putting C4 together in a in
Scott,
a bowl, and then blowing up a tree, and they're playing that music.
Yeah,
so great.
You loved it when it was in this movie's sister movie, E.T.
No, because in E.T. it was John Williams, and he knows what he's doing, and it's the right moments. This thing was the weirdest choices.
Why do I feel jaunty when he is making a mass murdering device? It's weird, but I kind of liked it.
You feel jaunty.
Yeah,
man, this device that could kill 3 million people in a blast radius sure makes me feel jaunty.
This movie is so ripped off E.T. And the moment when you really feel it the most is when the army shows up at her house and just barges in.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, wow, E.T. should have sued them.
I am my rat.
Yeah.
E.T.'s not a real person.
It's like your grandmother's throat was slit. It just doesn't fit. Lithgow making another sound. Okay, there's that. This is an odd reference.
What's the problem? Was he sexually abusing the hamsters or something?
Yeah, you little piece of shit. It's
wasn't that was Roland, right?
Yeah, it was Roland.
Roland is like the best.
Oh,
I like Roland, actually.
Yeah. I hate it.
Robert Sean Leonard, that's his name, right?
Yes.
No, Max was Robert Sean.
Oh, right. Max. Yeah, the other guy, I don't know who he is. He was skinny, weirdo dude.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's a wiener. All right, this is gross.
I invented a way of using insects as a dietary supplement for humans.
All right, just eat them. That's what you do. You eat them.
I made a condom out of a Ziploc bag and some staples. Whatever, MacGyver.
No kidding. All right, I found another clip that Ibbot's mom sent me. It's this is overheard at Ibbot's prom they were trying to explain why Ibbot was having problems. Okay, so here it is.
You'll have to excuse him, he's got a hormone imbalance.
There you go. I almost gave away the punchline there.
He's got more than that.
Ain't that the truth?
Here's the line everybody seems to remember from this movie. People were quoting it on Twitter to me when we said what movie we were doing. So here you go.
I never thought I'd say this to anybody, but
I gotta go get the atomic bomb out of the car.
Where'd you put What's it? The glove box?
There was no more obvious moment that I thought, as soon as I go to IMDb and look at trivia, it's going to say Matthew Broderick was considered for the role of this film, and Corey Haim was considered for the role of this film.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
I'm amazed that there's none of that on here, but it feels like that was written with like
so many Matthew of these Broderick. So many of these people went on to have careers, except this kid, which kind of bums me out. Yeah. I found some modern day pictures of him. He looks happy.
Val
looks
like Kilmer in this role.
Oh my gosh, Val Kilmer would have been great. But that's just real genius again, right?
Same that deal. Is real genius, yeah.
Yeah, another only, dick with the big brain.
Dick with the big brain. Do you know what they call her? Oh, never mind. You know what their brain is part of the... Oh, never mind.
Here is Frasier's dad.
Don't try my patience, boy.
Come on, Paul.
Get that stuff into the typewriter. What's that over there?
Excuse me, this is a private room.
Who are you?
My name is Jennifer Anderman. My father's a lawyer.
Good, you're going to need him.
Niles, what are you and Daphne doing in that room over there? I can't hear him without...
Mahoney makes every movie better.
Yeah,
he does.
I like him.
Speaking of which, and I know it's not, we're not nearly at the Star Trek connection part, but was there anybody else that thought that the guy who was shooting the syringe of...
Data?
Sodium pentothal? Yes, did anybody else think it was Brett Spiner?
You know what my very next clip is called? Sounds like Data, in fact. Here, I'll play it.
And it even then looks like Data,
too. Yeah, let's all... Or before I do that...
Scrutiny!
Just another example of Frasier's dad. We've seen him now twice, I believe, on FilmSec. Anyway, here you go. It is the guy that sounds like Data, and for a minute, I thought it was Brent Spiner, like, for real. Yeah. So here it is.
Just to relax you. To help you remember.
It sounds just like him!
I can hear it now.
And it looks like him, too. Oh, my God. You look at this guy, and he's got a lot of the same facial things, except he's super bald, and I'm thinking he's probably... would have been 65 during Next Generation, like way older.
That was super bald anyway. I mean, has that rift between,
I guess I'm super bald cause I don't have any hair on my head, but he had just the sides. He had the Costanza going on.
Yeah.
Nice.
You and I are sharing the same brain lately. That is exactly right. When you said that, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my very next clip. And I heard Data as well. Yeah. He's totally, he totally sounds like him. I mean, listen to this one more time.
Next thing you know, you're going to start completing each other's
sentences. Hold on. Listen to this.
Just to relax you. To help you remember.
Especially that part. To help you remember.
I remember. And he's got that same kind of crooked Brent Spiner smile. It's just, I had to look at all of the cast and say, that has to be Brent Spiner. Yeah.
He looked like Brent Spiner had a, it's a like a Brent Spiner, John Hodgman sandwich, that guy. He looks just like him.
I love the idea that some general who found himself in charge of a stateside, like, like energy investigation unit or something, has to go track down what might be a nuclear device. And he's like making a phone call talking about, okay, so we're going to need about 50 MPs. Do you have the guy who has all of the torture chemicals and syringes? Bring him.
Like, I'm going to need a desk lamp.
Yeah.
That was the most impromptu interrogation room I'd ever seen in my life.
Apparently every hotel has an interrogation room. Right. Yeah.
Hit him with the Gideon Bible. It's over there in the drawer of the,
They always come clean when you hit them with the Bible.
Always.
That's right.
That's their deal. Okay, a couple final clips. How about, let's see. Oh, this is a short one.
Hi, Mom. Don't get crazy.
I love how quick he just says, don't get crazy. Like, she's just, the first thing she's going to do is get crazy. So, well done. Here's a bomb joke.
Paul, did you build an atomic bomb?
Only a little one.
I like that. It's pretty funny.
Bomb.
And then this guy sounds like he's talking about wieners.
This is Unit 1. The package has arrived. And it's hot.
Very euphemistic, that guy. With what
he do they really need to talk in code? I mean, everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And there's no way they would have given him the assignment Unit 1.
Yeah.
Unit 1? No, you're not Unit 1. You're like Unit 7.
Yeah.
At the highest.
I agree. Well, that finishes those. And that means this. It's the Film Sack Checklist, which goes like this. No way that Ford Escort would run that well. Check. Take that, Ford Escorts. Science Kid Knows Nothing Except Science. Yeah, check. And Frasier's Dad. Check. Star Trek stuff. There are a few. We got Timothy Carehart. He's the relief guard in TNG. Played a bunch of characters in Redemption 2. Multiple characters. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Lieutenant Commander Christopher Hobson. I take it back. One guy. Stephen Markle, is an interrogator. Oh, he's the interrogator. Oh, my gosh, this is hilarious. In TNG, he played Kova Thal in the third season episode, Allegiance. So straight up, he's in Star Trek as well. That's really funny.
It's too bad he didn't play Noonien Soon. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Right?
Yeah. I wish that the lore character or some of these other alternate data things were not just Brent Spiner again.
Yeah, over and over and
yeah,
over.
Yeah, I would have liked that. Let's see. Robert Shanahan, he's a government aide in this in TNG. Played Lieutenant Commander Dexter Remick in the first two season episodes. In two first season episodes. Dan Butler was a SWAT dude in Voyager, played Stealth, an imposter.
SWAT dude.
He was briefly Tom Paris in the episode Vis-a-Vis and is best known for his role as Robert Bulldog Briscoe on Frasier. So he's back again.
Wow.
Yep. All these Frasier connections.
Really?
Weird. And soundtrack grading, we get an MF for montage friendly.
I actually wrote down, sounds like previous movies like War Games and E.T., only not quite the quality.
Yeah. You know what?
It's the whole, you know, adults are stupid kind of thing, but it really backfires on the viewer for this because, like, no, listen to the adults. The adults are the intelligent one, dude.
Right. Yeah.
Quit acting like an idiot and turn that thing over.
No kidding. I'm sure we rooted for this kid when we were all younger, or kids like this, but nowadays,
it's like, shit. I absolutely did. He was like my hero when I was younger than him watching this movie. Mm. And I remember absolutely hating John Lithgow, and I don't know why now. I can't access why I thought John Lithgow was such a bad, except I think I'd been taught as a kid that like nukes were bad and people like him were trying to ruin the world, and so I come in with a prejudice, and then he just confirms it the whole movie.
Yeah,
and that's what this movie was. It was to say it's okay by any means necessary, because this is what you have to do, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Didn't that's like my it. Thinking. Where the hell was I? Sorry. Oh, I know where we are. It's time for the Twitter post. This is where 140 characters or less, you guys have an opportunity to sum this film up. Let's start in traditional order with Randy.
What's the movie called? The Manhattan Project. John Lithgow just wants to get laid with Jill Eikenberry. Christopher Collett just wants to get laid with Cynthia Nixon. This is what men do. They make a bomb.
That's it. All right, sure. Why not? Also, Sarge, Randy, you are there on Skype, right? I just want to make sure that. Okay. All right. Just making sure because you really.
Did you not,
no,
did
I the get the joke. I get the through? Joke, but it was so effective that you, in my mind, you actually vanished. And I just want to make sure.
That joke was so fast it drove on by.
Yeah, no, it was good. Okay. It was good. I enjoyed it.
But it did blow the horn. Meet me.
This was one of those times when I felt like going first meant I got to make the joke about the movie being a bomb. Okay.
Well, I was trying to connect that to sex.
I liked it.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I was trying to connect it to, no, wait, how is making a bomb a sex thing?
How do you do it? Brian Dunaway, you're next.
Okay, so I wrote two Twitter posts. One of them I wrote as an American and one is a Russian. What do you want to hear? The Manhattan Project. Like asking, what motion detectors are for? You know what they're for. You know.
They're detecting for detecting motion. You know. Ear. There you go. Finally, his post, it's Brian Ibbett.
All right, I've got a robot arm here that's going to be writing my Twitter post this week. The Manhattan Project. Beep, 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 beep. Oh, I've run out of characters.
Nice. You know, it's funny because when I was watching that scene, that's the kind of scene that makes you pause Netflix and go, how long is this movie?
Because it goes forever.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if you're making me watch a 2-hour movie and you just gave me 5 minutes of that, I'm going
to
kill you.
I did it too. I paused it. That's about the time I paused it. I wanted to see. I was like, oh gosh, we're not even to 50. We have still like an hour and 10 minutes left. All right. Well done. Just handed to me here. We got, I'm told this is the alternate titles. These almost happened. The Bad Actin' Project. That's number one. That got turned over. They didn't use it, nor did they use Wrong Science. Get it? Like weird science, but wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like there Wrong Science.
I wish they had a paid-up lady.
There was a third title I thought of that I heard of called Nuclear Physics in the City.
That's good. That's actually the best one, and damn it, I can't. I'm sad I didn't think of that. That's really good. All right. This is, how about, this is Noth, the nuke you're looking for. Okay. Probably not that.
Read him his Miranda rights.
There you go. See, we can keep going. Email, got an email. This came to us from Alex. He sent it to filmsack@gmail.com, and it reads like this. Hey, Sackers, I'm a recent fan, but have blown through some of my favorite and least favorite movies you guys have been sacking along the way, all the way back to episode 26 in 2010. I was listening to the one about Mortal Kombat and working my way up to Lost in Space. This has turned into one of my favorite podcasts, as I feel like I get to relive some old memories about terrible great movies from my childhood and then get to listen to friends talk about them afterwards. With all of that being said, please, 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 in caps, sack the 1997 masterpiece of total poo we call Spawn, with Martin Sheen's pure assholery and John Leguizamo's surprisingly good creepy clown, and the trope per scene percentage makes this movie perfect for you guys. Thanks, Alex. Alex, boy, do we have some good news for you, buddy.
No kidding.
Our next film will be Spawn. The 1997 Spawn. Yep. I remember going to that movie in the theater with my friend, Andrew. We were super stoked. Both, you know, fans of the comic and everything. Mm-hmm. I loved everything McFarlane did, and that movie sucked. But it sucked in a way that I just felt like, you know, since we've been doing FilmSack, it just always felt like this was going to come someday. We were going to get to this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it was like Tim Burton's Batman for its time.
Kind of. Sort of.
About 8 years ago, Scott and I sat and talked to Todd McFarlane, and before we did, we were both like, okay, so that movie sucked. We cannot. We can't talk about that movie too much because we're going to end up talking about how bad it was.
Yeah. That was a fun convo. You know, back when the other person was sane. we very much look forward to this. So the Cape CGI technology on display here is going to be something else, man. Because it's good for the time, but I don't think that looks good now. We'll see. But yeah, Spawn deserves a reboot. Spawn, and I think it's getting one. I heard somewhere that there was some work going on, but Spawn deserves a good telling of its story. It's a great, I think it's a great comic. I think it's worthy of more than what they got. In fact, if you want to see something really good, and if you have HBO Go or Now or HBO in general, you should check out the Spawn animated series that was on HBO. Mm-hmm. Not for the kids at all, but it's extremely well done. It's like little, cool little mobster mini stories, and it's extremely well made. Anyway, so that's coming up, and thanks, Alex, and those who've been asking for Spawn forever. It finally spawned on Netflix. That's going to do it for us. FilmSack.com is our website. You can visit it and talk on the blog and hang out and whatever. Find all the links you need. Everything's there. FilmSack.com. You can leave us voice or emails at FilmSack@gmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter @FilmSack. It's going to do it for us. Oh, and check, by the way, if you want to see the live FilmSack that we did and do the visual version of it, if you head on over to NerdTacular.com, you'll find a link directly to it, and you can see the raw footage of us. It has good sound quality, shows us on stage, doing all our clips and everything. So definitely worth checking out.
Yay!
I think that's it for me, for Brian, and for Randy. Mm. We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.